Paddy Chayefsky once told me that when he finally figured out what his story was about, he'd write it out in one sentence and scotch tape it to his typewriter so that nothing going through the machine wouldn't in one way or another express the central theme. By finally figured out, Chayefsky meant the discovery of his story's meaning out of the last act climax. By wouldn't in one way or another express the central theme, he meant he'd forge the story dynamically, moving it back and forth across the opposing charges of his primary values. In other words, he fashioned his stories by playing idea against counter-idea. As a story moves from its premise to the story climax and its controlling idea, the telling is built out of two ideas, not one. Idea and counter-idea, the positive and negative expression of the same meaning. If, for example, it were a film in the crime genre, the value at stake, of course, would be justice. The meaning of its scenes or sequences will alternate between a positive idea such as justice will prevail because the protagonist is tenaciously resourceful and courageous as the detective moves ever closer to solving the crime, and a negative counter-idea such as injustice will triumph because the antagonist is overwhelmingly ruthless and powerful as the criminal manages to elude or do worse to the protagonist. Whichever of the two is dramatized in the story climax becomes the controlling idea of value plus cause, the pure statement of the story's conclusive and decisive meaning. This rhythm of idea versus counter-idea is fundamental and essential to our art. It pulses at the heart of all fine stories, no matter how internalized the action. What's more, this simple dynamic can become very complex, subtle, and ironic. In Sea of Love, Detective Keller falls in love with his chief suspect. As a result, each scene that points toward her guilt turns with irony, positive on the value of justice, negative on the value of love. In the maturation plot, Shine, David's musical victories, positive, provoke his father's envy and brutal repression, negative, driving the pianist into a pathological immaturity, doubly negative, which makes his final success a triumph of maturity in both art and spirit, doubly positive. Writers and the stories they tell can be usefully divided into three grand categories according to their controlling ideas. Upending stories expressing the optimism, hopes, and dreams of mankind, a positively charged vision of the human spirit, life as we wish it to be. For example, love fills our lives when we conquer intellectual illusions and follow our instincts. Hannah and her sisters. The pessimistic, down-ending stories expressing our cynicism, our sense of loss and misfortune, a negatively charged vision of civilization's decline, of humanity's dark dimensions, life as we dread it to be, but know it so often is. Evil triumphs because it's a part of human nature. Chinatown. The ironic, up-down-ending stories expressing our sense of the complex dual nature of existence, a simultaneously charged positive and negative vision, life at its most complete and realistic. Here, optimism, idealism, and pessimism, cynicism merge and result in an ironic controlling idea: love is both pleasure and pain, a poignant anguish, a tender cruelty we pursue because without it, life has no meaning. Annie Hall, Manhattan, Addicted to Love. The effect of irony on an audience is that wonderful reaction, ah, life is just like that. We recognize that idealism and pessimism are at the extremes of experience, that life is rarely all sunshine and strawberries, nor is it all doom and dreck. It is both. From the worst of human experiences, something positive can be gained. For the richest of human experiences, a great price must be paid. No matter how we try to plot a straight passage through life, we sail on the tides of irony. reality is relentlessly ironic. And this is why stories that end in irony tend to last the longest through time, travel the widest in the world, and draw the greatest love and respect from audiences. This is also why, of the three possible emotional charges at climax, irony is by far the most difficult to write. It demands the deepest wisdom and the highest craft for three reasons. First, it's tough enough to come up with either a bright, idealistic ending or a sober, pessimistic ending that's satisfying and convincing. But an ironic climax is a single action that makes both a positive and negative statement. How to express both in one action. Second, how to say both clearly. Irony doesn't mean ambiguity. Ambiguity is a blur. One thing cannot be distinguished from another. But there's nothing ambiguous about irony. It's a clear double declaration of what's gained and what's lost side by side. Nor does irony mean coincidence. A true irony is honestly motivated. Stories that end by random chance, doubly charged or not, are meaningless, not ironic. Third, if at climax the life situation of the protagonist is both positive and negative, how to express it so that the two charges remain separated in the audience's experience and don't cancel each other out and you end up saying nothing? Once you discover your controlling idea, take it seriously and respect it. Never allow yourself the luxury of thinking it's just entertainment. Whether it be The Wizard of Oz or La Dolce Vita, nothing we do is innocent. All coherent stories express an idea veiled inside an emotional spell. In 388 BC, Plato urged the city fathers of Athens to exile all poets and storytellers. They are a threat to society, he argued. Writers deal with ideas, but not in the open, rational manner of philosophers. Instead, they wrap their ideas inside the powerful emotions of art. Yet, felt ideas, as Plato pointed out, are ideas nonetheless. Every effective story sends a charged idea out to us, in effect compelling the idea into us, so that we must believe. In fact, the persuasive power of a story is so great that we may believe its meaning even when we find it morally repellent. Given stories' power to influence, we cannot ignore the issue of the artist's social responsibility. I believe we have no responsibility to cure social ills or renew faith in humanity, to uplift the spirits of society, or even express our inner being. We have only one responsibility, to tell the truth. Therefore, study the climax of your last act and extract from it your controlling idea. But before you take another step, ask yourself this question: is this the truth? Do I believe in the meaning of my story? If the answer is no, trash it and start again. If yes, do everything possible to get your work into the world. For although an artist may, in his private life, lie to others, even to himself, when he creates, he tells the truth. And in a world of lies and liars, an honest work of art is always an act of social responsibility.